Let me invite you to, if it's comfortable, allow your eyes to close or just softly unfocused gaze to whatever's in front of you. And take a moment to enjoy a few nice, slow, deep breaths. And as you do, maybe allow yourself to listen. To listen to the voice within. Maybe within there are voices. Can you just again listen? It's been said that before every thought, there is a place called home. Can you touch that place right now? Home is that place inside where love lives. Can you draw near again and return to the love that is in your heart? Maybe let these words be a source of comfort and encouragement. You don't have to be loved to receive it. You don't have to do anything or prove anything. You don't have to become what someone else needs you to be. You don't have to perform or audition for someone's love for you. Love is what you inherit as you open your eyes. Love is what is here for you from within you. Love is not what you go out to search for. Love is what waits for you to return to it. Here, in our body, we too often abandon, too often overlook. Here, in this body that we're never told is the holy of holies, love waits for us to realize that it sees out through our eyes. Love waits for us to return to it, finally. After all our searching ends, love is here within. Maybe taking a moment to notice how love feels, how it feels in your body. And just take it in. And then slowly, gently, taking a couple more nice deep breaths, as you're ready, gently opening your eyes.
That snuck up on me. I was enjoying that. Thank you. Didn't realize it was my turn already. Well, good morning. My name is Sport, if we've not had the privilege of meeting. And I am a chaplain with hospice by day, and I spend my days sitting usually at the bedside, sometimes chairs, of people that are in their last, to everybody's best knowledge, months of their life. And I get to give audience to their souls and to celebrate their spirits. And usually that comes in the form of getting to listen to their stories. And today, I've been here once before to speak. And in case you don't know, I pastored in a former life. And I don't really feel like getting up to like stand up and preach, so I'm going to sit here on my stool and act like I'm at a campfire with you instead, and hopefully share more like that today. So I've spent most of my life using words like soul and spirit, not sometimes thinking I knew what they meant, and now I'm probably less certain now than ever. Exactly what they mean. But I wonder at times, I have lots of wonderings about soul and of spirit, and I wonder if what we call the soul is that deepest part of the human experience that somehow knows us before all of the roles that we play do. Before being a pastor, okay, before being a husband, before being successful, before failing, before whatever name it is that the world has given us or whatever name it is we've taken on for ourselves. And so in the spirit of that, I had the chance to do something very unusual this weekend that James alluded to. And that I had a chance to take James out into the wilderness of Montana. And so, and we had the most incredible time, but he was not there as Pastor James, right? Or any other names that have been part of his life. He was just there with me. And so I have heard through the rumor mill that, including the last time I was here, James grilled me with all kinds of questions, and I understand he's been interviewing people a lot this summer. So I thought, turnabout's fair play. I think I should put James on the hot seat for a change, if you guys would be so kind. So why don't you grab a stool and let me... Yes. Oh, and you so deserve this. So actually, it was just this morning, about 5 hours ago, we were breaking down our tents up in the Yak of Montana, driving back here to be ready for this now. And so this is about as real time as it gets. And I thought maybe it'd be good to just talk a little bit about the experience. I've shared last time I was here about how it was that the wilderness cared for my soul and is really pivotal in my own healing journey. And so went into some of that last time, but this time you came.
Yeah.
And you're a city guy. And you don't slow down very much. And, so I told James, I said, okay, here's the deal. I know you aren't sure exactly what it is you want or need out of this weekend, but every couple hours I'm going to stop you and say, what does your soul need now? And I'm not sure exactly where to start, but... when did you first feel yourself starting to slow down this week?
Yeah, we got up there on Friday night. It really wasn't until Saturday morning, because you're right, you know, I'm used to running at about Mach 3 and just go, 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 do, 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 da, 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 da. And I just want to start by saying, well, a couple things. First, the place that we went, you had a chance to see, it's just beautiful. Have any of you ever been to that part of the state here? Yeah, I mean, what a beautiful, beautiful place. And you just can't help but slow down when you go there. You just feel the energy go. And this is going to sound like an infomercial for sport, and it probably is. Your presence is also inviting to shed the roles and the speed of things. There's a quietness and a gentleness to your spirit that invited mine to just... be. And these are things that are not learned in school or by reading books. I think you're just born with it. And you have an innate wisdom to the land and to the wild that's unique. And this is important, a gift of noble silence. Oftentimes when we get in these places, we can get real chatty. And you just allowed times of quiet, driving in the car, quiet, being around camp, quiet. A lot of times you would ask me, what does my soul need? I don't know. And that's okay. You didn't press it. You didn't try to go digging for it or make me feel like I was wrong, but you just allowed that not knowing to be there. So that's where it all began.
Cool. Was the silence comfortable for you?
I can't tell you how comfortable it was. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Very comfortable. You know, they say the old thing, you know, what is it? Women have to use 50,000 words a day. You know, men, maybe 10. You know, yeah. And it felt really good to not talk, even though that's what I do for a living. Yeah.
Cool. So when you think back over those last couple days, what comes to your mind first?
Yeah, the sense of belonging. I've shared this before, that being here in Idaho, the land, the place, has just given me a sense of belonging, that I belong here just as I am, a city kid from the west side. And that's okay. I don't have to try to make myself into something else. I don't have to try to be what others here need me to be. I can just show up as who I am and be met by the land with a peace and a welcoming and an arrival that is just sweet and spacious and grounding. So that was my first impression.
Yeah, and I think I saw that happening for you, where you were like touching the ground, bare feet, you know, so aware of everything that was going on. It felt like you were really ready to be there.
Yeah.
Even though you weren't sure exactly what you wanted or needed. So
yeah,
that was really cool. Was there a moment that you felt particularly present?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it started when we got there. We drove up to a waterfall somewhere about an hour from camp and just had a chance to sit at this waterfall and just gaze and watch. And that's when I just felt myself start to slow down. And again, it wasn't like I had a workbook or a worksheet or questions to answer or anything, but just take in the sights, breathe the air, look at the trees, watch the water flow. And then that night around the campfire, it was a very meditative experience. And in just that period of meditation, and I do a lot of that, I had a chance to really, first notice just how wired my body is, just to, you know. And then as that energy passed, it, you know, not trying to fix it, not trying to change it, not trying to pathologize it, just, okay, yeah, look how hard I'm, okay, all right, just let that go. Yeah, there was a sweet moment where I just laid on the ground, whole body, arms out, and just felt the peace and the stillness and the grounding of the earth taking away all that energy of just go, 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 and receiving all the stillness of just being, of just being. And then during that time, I hope I'm not getting ahead of myself, this is where his intuition knows. He walked me over to a tree, a big cedar tree, and just said, this tree is a gift for you. And so I stood there. Now again, this isn't woo-woo, you know, the tree became a swami or something like, you know, no. But touching the tree in all of its tree-ness, you know, here's the deal. A tree is just a tree, right? I mean, think about that. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, you know, with all the movement and the, you know, the life and all that kind of stuff that goes in a tree. But if you just look at any one of these trees out there, they don't shift. They don't change. Yes, they adapt over years and years of evolution, of course, but I mean, it just is. And so to take in the stillness, the rootedness, the groundness, the peaceful being of the tree was just very nurturing and enriching for me.
That's good. I think you stood with that tree for maybe an hour or two.
Yeah, I had no time. Yeah, I had no sense of time. You were watching time, so yeah, it was beautiful.
Is there any experience you had specifically that you would consider more sacred than the others?
Well, of course, that tree moment was very sacred, but then after that, sitting around the campfire, by to this time the sun had gone down, and just taking in the warmth and glow of the fire was very calming and very peaceful again and very nourishing, just taking in that. And then with you being there as well, you were just like this, you know, sacred, loving, friendly presence. And so that human connection with the fire, you know, the trees kind of became this canopy of just covering, you know. That was just, it was holy and it was sacred for sure.
Actually, I was just the one keeping the fire going. is there anything that happened this week that you don't have words for yet?
So the next day,
no, you don't have words, you don't have anything to say. Such a preacher, I don't know. Go ahead, talk. Isn't it refreshing?
The next day, yesterday, we took a hike into this. We did some bushwhacking through this unknown, unmarked trail up a little creek. We had to go very carefully because it was walking over rocks and things. And, you know, it was fun for me because I just had to put my foot where sports were. And then we got to this waterfall. And it was like, and I had the chance to do something I'd never done before, jump into the 50-degree water. Which I've done that before. I'm not afraid of cold water or anything like that, but then actually swim under the waterfall and feel the energy of the water, that was a rush. I was like, wow, I have no idea what that was about, but to be in that little pool where we were with the water crushing down, feeling the power of the cold water, was just something. And the experience of my body shaking and shivering, you were in the water for hours. You know, I'm like 10 minutes and I'm done. But it was interesting to just sort of integrate my body's, you know, shaking to keep alive with some of the shaking that I experienced as our time on Friday night was starting, and just realize, hey, this is just my body doing what my body does to stay alive. You know, so again, it's not pathologizing or making wrong the experience of what the mind might call nervousness or anxiety or whatever. But no, it's just part of this human life. And yeah, and we all deal with it differently. And again, to just, when we can be human, it can just be loved and celebrated.
That's very good. Yeah, and you did that like a champ, by the way. I was still taking off my backpack, and he was in the water and sitting there in that cold water, and then later swimming through it. I wish I had the video ready to show you of him doing that. And did you encounter any part of yourself this weekend that you don't usually hear from very often? And you may not even have an answer for that, and it might just be for your own thoughts later. So if you don't have an answer for it, that's just fine. If you do,
Yeah, I don't. I think a few more days may pass as it all just comes together. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining me this weekend.
Yeah.
Love you much, brother.
Love you too.
So in 2015, I was under a waterfall in a hidden crevice in the Cabinet Mountains. And I was really there for my mental health more than anything. And I had found this waterfall, and I was under those waters. It comes down about 150 to 200 feet. And I was in, and the water was flowing over my head. And I heard a voice saying, "Go back to Panama." I've never heard an audible voice, but it was as audible in the wilderness, but it was as audible as I ever heard. So I wasn't sure exactly why, but 4 months later, I was on my way to Panama. And the main reason I was telling myself at the time was that I was learning how to trust my heart. I was learning how to follow my heart, because I'd come from a tradition that had taught me that the heart is wicked and deceitful above all things. Never trust your heart. And so I was extracting myself from that. And so I thought, well, this is good practice. I'm going to go ahead and just follow what my heart is saying. And I'm that voice, my heart, I thought were somehow intertwined. And I headed off to Panama. And I was going to do a one-month walkabout in the country of Panama. Now, for decades, I had told people whenever Panama conversation had come up, and I would say, my only full-color, full-sensory memories of life were in the country of Panama. And all other memories of my life were grayscale. They were faded. They're hard to even grab onto. But everything I remembered about Panama were just vibrant. Even the smells, everything was there. And the reason that Panama was there in the first place was that I was raised in Panama until I was 12 years of age. And my folks were missionaries in the country of Panama, and I was a jungle boy. And so as a up to 12 years old boy, and much younger, I had a machete on my waist about as long as my short legs. I was chopping paths through the jungle. I was catching boa constrictors. I was building bamboo forts in the jungle. I was swinging from vines in the jungle, literally. And I got back to Panama, and the most incredible thing happened for me. And it was, well, there's a number of things, but the first thing that stood out to me was, it was all true. It happened accurately. Like, all the things I had been sensing and hearing and remembering were just the way I remembered. The same smells. I never drove as a 12-year-old kid. I was driving around as though I had been there my whole life. I knew exactly where to go, how to find old landmarks, how to find old schools, old churches, old houses. I knew exactly where to go. And for some reason, that was really important for me to just have that sense of, oh, I didn't like overblow my memories of Panama. They're exactly what I remembered. And so I started out by retracing my childhood steps. And before I went into other parts of the country, I stayed, recorded video, voice-to-text journaling as I'm walking around remembering. And then the very last day of my walkabout, I went back and I made the exact same trip in silence. And now, last time I was here, I made a brief reference to the fact that there was something in me that still remembered a boy named Sport when I was out in the wilderness. So months after I was born, my father, who had named me after himself, so I was a junior, he decided that he had given me the wrong name and that he actually thought that I had a different spirit, a different something than the name that he had given me on my birth certificate, and so he started calling me Sport. And my whole world, since I was 5 months old, called me Sport. Nobody, my teachers didn't know I had a different name. No, I signed my papers, everything was Sport, Sport, Sport. And so I did that all the way into junior high. And then my folks, on real rapid fashion, decided to leave Panama and come back to the States. And so my introduction to the United States was in junior high school in Shaw Middle School in Spokane, Washington. So far away from my jungle. And this was a different kind of jungle. And it had a whole different set of rules. And the kids up here didn't have any context for a kid named Sport. So it just became something for them to tease me about. The new shortest kid in the school, the new kid. So after about a year of that, I decided I would train everyone to not call me Sport, and I stopped answering to Sport. Even my parents, my sisters, my whole world. So I think I came to the conclusion at that young age, maybe without all of this clarity of thought, but that jungles and Sport were going to have to fade away in order to make it in this new world. Right? So it was years later, I've got three kids, and I start taking them out into the wilderness. And I take them one at a time for about a week at a shot. And the very first trip I made, my oldest was 5 years old, and we went to Mount Rainier, and we sat camped next to the White River, roaring by, and I realized that there was something about those waters, there was something about the fire that was like the white noise was doing something to my head in a good way. Like, I had way too many thoughts in my head, but the thoughts seemed to get absorbed by all of that and disappear somehow. And so these trips we would call our most amazing adventures. So every summer we were planning for our most amazing adventures. And that year I was reading books to my son by the fire, and he looked up at me and he goes, "Tell me a Daddy, when Daddy was a little guy story." And so I said, let me think about that. So the next night, I sat down with him. I said, I'll tell you when Daddy was a little guy story. And so I said, once upon a time, Daddy was a little guy, and his name was Sport. And Sport, and then I would tell a tale from Panama, always true and always located there in Panama. And that became a nightly ritual. And my kids, without knowing it, were somehow taking me back somewhere important. I didn't know that at the time. All I knew is that we had this ritual that I would tell stories, 10 or 15 or 20, eventually accumulated that I could go back to with them. So I had that little history, and then when I started my flight to Panama for that walkabout, I was on the plane journaling. When I was on the plane and I journaled, they say that when you fly places long distances, you should sometimes stay still when you arrive so that your soul can catch up to you. Okay. Well, I didn't feel that way. I felt like I am chasing my soul. And I wrote it down, but I had no idea what that meant. So, so it was during this trip, while I'm retracing my footsteps, I re-encountered firsthand my truest, most authentic, most alive self of my life, my full color memory self, my full sensory memory self of Sport, because everywhere I turned was a life of Sport. And I didn't even know that at the time. I just, looking back, I can see that that whole trip was about remembering. And I was all by myself. I didn't have anybody to debrief with about the trip. I was just, for a whole month, working my way through my childhood. And then I wondered in one of my journal notes that on that trip, I wonder what it would be like to be called Sport again. I don't even know how that would work, but for some reason, I wrote, I think I'm going to experience that. I didn't have any reason to believe that would be true. A couple years later, I'm in a master's program. I'm writing a letter to myself in a school project, and something I would receive two years later upon graduation. I started it with Sport. I hope that this binds you, me, or us whole or wholer. Even though that's not a word, again. And then I finished the letter saying, do you remember your name, the one that you shed in junior high? Is anyone calling you that again? And then I signed it, Sport. I don't even remember writing the letter. I received it in 2019 back. So recently, I've been experimenting with putting pieces of my own experience in the wild or in some of my personal stories into music. And I tried to write something about that boy and the name I left behind and the strange way it eventually found me again. And I think this song, I'm going to just have him play it. The words come across, so hopefully it'll be easy to follow. Says something that I haven't quite known exactly how to say like this. And we'll listen to this, and then we'll wrap up shortly. Thanks.
Okay. I was a barefoot kid where the jungle breathed. Rain on tin in the mango trees. Everybody knew the name they called, not the one on the paper. The one that fit my soul. I climb every rock, I chase every stream. The world was still as wide as a 12-year-old could dream. Back then, I didn't know a name could disappear. Then came lockers, hallways, winter skies. Laughter has a way of changing lives. They laughed at Sport, so I buried him deep. taught my own family a different name to keep. Paul answered every roll call, every job, every prayer. But somewhere underneath, someone else was still there. 'Cause names don't die, they just learn away. Like rivers underground, like seeds beneath the wave. And every mile I wander, every mountain I climbed, I wasn't looking for a place. I was looking for my name. Pastor, father, a man who knew the way, but there was still a little boy who never really went away. Sometimes beside the water, sometimes by the flame, he'd whisper through the silence, do you remember your name? And one day, someone spoke it like it had never been lost. No hesitation, no explanation, just a spark. And something inside me stood up again, not a different man, the same boy coming home. Names don't die, they just learn to wait. They circle back like old friends who know the game. And after all the miles, all the years, all the trying to belong,
sometimes I wonder if that's what soul is, the part of us that remembers. So, thank you.
Keep your chin.